our accelerator has been called the Y Combinator for Female Founders. The thing that I know founders find really valuable in our content and our programming is social connections to investors. So we do investor matching, investor, you know, one-on-ones, you know, the sector, the industry, the stage that the founder is in, and connect them to investors in our network and have those founders meet people that they would not have otherwise had a chance to meet.
I've been trying to get Divya on the pod for so long, and it was such a pleasure finally doing this with her and talking about her perspective on just how female entrepreneurs can be better supported to help make a difference. And if you're like me, you'll totally fall in love with Divya's personal story of how she's built her career from India and entered the world of venture capital today, where she's a partner at Graham Walker based out of Seattle. Fun fact is that her fund wasn't always a VC firm, and how they got started is actually pretty unique, and I'm happy to take you on that journey today on the pod. And don't worry, I ask her all the right questions. And as always, I did go deep into platform with her to truly understand what she and her team does to help their founders. And Divya and I made sure that we left no stone unturned. So enjoy. Divya, finally the day's here and I get to do this awesome podcast with you. I'm so happy that you've joined us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Mash. Likewise, very excited for this.
Perfect. I got the perfect room with the perfect lighting, and I put on the first shirt I actually think I had on my first episode. So it's a special day for me.
I feel honored. I feel very special.
And for those of you who are listening and are not seeing the video, Divya has a very nice painting in the back. She has a plant on the other side. You know, she's fully prepped for this episode. So I'm very, very excited to dive in.
I love that. Yeah, backgrounds are always fun for me. I enjoy having some interest in the background.
So it's very well organized. So I guess before we dive in, Divya, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what you're up to these days?
Yeah. Thank you for having me on this podcast. I am Divya Kakkad. I'm a partner at Graham Walker. We are the VC arm of the Female Founders Alliance, which is, to my knowledge, the biggest community supporting female founders via our accelerator and our programming. We have a Fund One, which is an early stage VC investing in tech that solves deeply human problems across work, health, and care. And as of date, we have about 40 companies in our portfolio, and we continue to invest out of that fund. So typically investing in that pre-seed to seed stage, and our check size is ranging between 200K to 400K. That's us. Oh, and I like to say this out loud, which is, you know, our mission at Graham Walker is to change the makeup of the NASDAQ by the time our kids go to college. So we serve that mission every day by funding companies that are led by women today.
One thing that stood out to me, Divya, when I was doing my research on you and your fund, is that Graham Walker wasn't always, you know, a fund from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And what surprised me even more was also your background. You know, you weren't always in finance. You weren't always in VC. You know, you were leading marketing in India, actually, before being a partner at your fund. Yeah. So talk to us about how all that came to be and how you went from leading marketing and branding to some great companies to now being a VC partner.
Yeah, that's always, it usually throws people in a tizzy when they read my background, because I come from marketing and branding, and I studied fashion brand management at a fashion school in London. So really as far away from finance or, you know, anything investing. So yeah, I started my career in retail back in India, because I was fascinated by the science of shopping and the art of brand building, and had the pleasure of sort of working for a few big European brands that were entering the Indian market at the time. And so it was a really hot time to be working in retail in India. And I was enjoying that, and there was really no reason for me to not be in retail. But I sort of stumbled upon an opportunity to work for a startup about 10 years ago, when I was tapped by an Indian startup that was in the jewelry marketplace. And they were trying to get into the US as a strategy, as a test. And so with them, I had a chance to sort of, you know, come on board and test out how it felt to be part of a startup, how to build a business from the ground up in the US. Was, you know, just, I mean, it was a amazing opportunity. Really hard one because I hadn't ever done anything like that before, but it just taught me so much. And I just thought that, you know, the things that I learned in that experience, I don't think any other experience could have potentially taught me any of that. And after growing that for a couple of years, the strategy changed, and then mm-hmm. the investors in India decided that they don't want to sort of focus on the US anymore because Asia was growing wildly. And so then I had to wind that down. So I thought I got a chance to see the other side.
Yeah.
And I just found that I really enjoyed wearing different hats and recognized that, you know, I was more than just a marketing person. I enjoyed product, I enjoyed sales. And that in being an entrepreneur, I could really be creative in solving mundane business problems. And from there, I moved on to my next startup, which was in the subscription box space, a very popular business model at the time. I don't recommend it anymore. there, I came on board sort of in place of a co-founder who was heading product at the time. So when I came on there, they had an MVP. They knew how to make money, like how to sort of go to market. But they were running out of money. And so the founder basically hired me and said, hey, we really want to be able to grow and be able to sell this business off in like 18 months tops. And so there was a very clear mandate. And he was a really seasoned entrepreneur. And I just learned so much from him. And he gave me sort of, you know, the space to test things out. And then if something worked, be like, okay, yeah, go run with it. And yeah. I think for me, again, that was just such an amazing experience. We were, you know, news, we were able to sell that company. And so that really cemented for me that I was a startup gal. Yeah. And lo and behold, like right after that, we moved to Seattle, had the opportunity to work with Starbucks here, dream job for, you know, a brand manager who went to school for literally brand management. And I think as someone who had never worked in corporate America, it was deeply validating for me to work in Starbucks. I was managing their packaged coffee business, which was just so, so fun. But also while I was there, the experience of working in this large conglomerate and being a young mom and being pregnant with my second, navigating corporate politics and all that BS, like it was just not for me. I deeply missed that entrepreneurial freedom that came with working in an early stage company. And so while my day job was, you know, packaged coffee, I was also very curious about women in leadership. And Starbucks did a really good job of, you know, equity. And they had women at, and they talk a lot about it internally, but this wasn't sort of communicated outside of the company. And so I sort of took it upon myself to, you know, introduce our next packaged coffee to showcase or highlight the story of women and coffee through each level of the supply chain.
Wow.
And so I'm really proud of this coffee. It still sells in Starbucks stores today. I like to believe that that's my legacy there.
Yeah.
All this to say that I think that was sort of the time when I started to recognize that I was really passionate about telling women's stories. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time for me, or the first step for me to find my next role in that realm. And I, yeah, had a meeting with Leslie, who was starting this, you know, company mm-hmm. back then called Female Founders Alliance. And that's how my journey at Female Founders Alliance began.
That is such a detailed overview. and it's there, everything is so like visually perfect in my mind. I know exactly what I want to ask you. You know, going back into the beginning of your career there, it's very cool how you got to actually get the experience as technically a co-founder and being part of the founding team and being an operator with boots on the ground, and you're able to fully bring the product to market, actually grow the company, and then actually take a step back. Like, you've seen so much and across so many different types of industries as well. And I bet that this helps you really see founders differently when you work with them at your fund. Because I think a lot of VC funds, Divya, the partners don't have operator experience. They come from a more financial mindset. What I find, and you know, research data suggests, is when VC partners and folks who support funds have an operator background, the funds tend to be more successful over time. And I think you having seen teams evolve and be a crucial part to that sets you and your fund up in a very, very successful position. So I'm very delighted that we got to, you know, take part in this story and just learn about your career and your past. This is actually super interesting.
Yeah, I think that this is, it does sort of set us a little bit apart from a lot of other funds, because actually everyone in our team is an operator and has worked in early stage startups at some point.
Beautiful.
Or, you know, has been a founder in the past in terms of, you know, in the case of Leslie. And I just think it brings a very different flavor to us as investors. From the outset, I think we acknowledge that being a founder can be, it can be really hard and really lonely. And just sort of respecting that this is, you know, that we've been there, we've been in your shoes, and we get it, I think makes a big difference to founders that we meet in our community. And I think we recognize how hard it can be for them, especially for a female founder. A lot of communities that exist today or have existed in the past have been really room filled with men. And it can be pretty intimidating for a woman to ask, you know, legit questions, but just not, you know, but feel like they may be undermined. And so I think because of this, we were able to sort of create that safe space for founders and be able to coach them and be able to sort of help them tell their stories better and really be able to help them defend their businesses in a way that sets them up for success while fundraising.
You know, that's such a solid point. And in fact, the first episode I ever recorded, which was actually in this room, and my guest was Abby from True Wealth Ventures. And she mentioned something very similar to what you said, is when you're, let's say your startup solving a contraception problem or it's providing a benefit, you walk into a room of male investors, you have to kind of explain things from ground zero. Whereas if you walk into a room with, let's say, female investors primarily, as a founder, I would feel more comfortable if I was the girl in the room. But also when it comes to the explaining the product and the benefits and the pain itself, the TAM, et cetera, people in the room would intuitively understand 80% of what this is solving and why it's critical. And it lowers the anxiety on the founder side. And I get to be myself when pitching my product and not have to keep up with a facade, right? And I think in words, I can't explain much, but it's highly, highly valuable, especially when a VC and a founder relationship, that's a decade-long relationship that you're building. And if you don't have the right partners at the table from day zero, who are you going to call at 1 a.m.? You know? So I'm very happy that founders in your fund have operators, and women to actually understand the products that they're building intuitively. I think that's a great differentiation. And I do want to point out that Starbucks packaging, by the way, is one of my favorites. Their coffee's too expensive. I'm very sorry. I don't think the coffee's worth it. But the packaging is really nice. You know? So if you have a picture of the packaging you helped develop, I'd love to put it on the podcast.
I'd like that. Nice. Okay, yeah. I can share that. I have pictures from it sells in stores today, but I'm happy to share it.
That's actually awesome. So I'm curious, Divya, right? Like you're clearly super passionate about helping women in VC and helping women build startups, right? Given that you've been in their shoes in the past as well. But where did all of this begin? Like, I think there's more to your story and I'd love to dig into that a little bit.
I think for me, a lot of this sort of came together after I became a parent. I grew up raised mostly by a single mom when I was little. And she would drill into us the importance of being financially independent, right? She herself was an entrepreneur, and I saw firsthand what hustle meant in my mom. She was resourceful. She taught herself skills to keep up with our business and as she grew it. And that has sort of really stayed with me. And so she ran an institute. She ran an institute for women where she would teach them skills that would enable them to run their own small businesses. And later, she was able to scale that by working with the government, by getting grants to sanction training programs for women from impoverished neighborhoods. And I have like vivid memories of accompanying her after school to various, you know, different facilities and watching her oversee these massive programs, teaching hundreds of women at a time. And then when we were coming back home in the car ride, she would tell me these were, you know, women or wives of fishermen, and that they were learning to sew or bake, and that now they could use those skills to start their own businesses. And that just, I think for me, painted this picture where I saw direct impact of having women, of what happens when you can have women work and how that can lift society as a whole. And I think I said this earlier when we chatted, that I don't know if this was front and center for me while I was working my career, but it was when I became a mom that it suddenly became clear to me that I wanted my work to be more meaningful. Mm-hmm. And if I was taking, you know, 10, 12 hours a day away from my kids, then it really had to be for a worthwhile cause. And what am I even role modeling for them? Like, what, that became just more and more important. So life feels very full circle for me right now.
You know, I want to point something out there. You, tons of gems. I'm having to take notes because it's just so many beautiful items there. You know, I second what you said towards the end is, you know, so I'm a single child. My mom, when I was young, she worked at a bank, and funny enough, she was working with marketing and branding, and this woman would not stop telling me about the marketing nuances. I was a child, Divya, and she would start telling me about branding for soaps. I'm like, Mom, I'm like 5 years old. Anyway, but having seen her develop her career through university, through the banks that she worked for and the agencies, and now she's a CEO of a foundation in Bangladesh, and the foundation's backed by the bank.
Oh, wow.
And having her go from SVP to CEO, and it has a profound impact on me. That's why when I have conversations like this with you and other women, believe it or not, I see it through a different lens, because I grew up in Southeast Asia. And as mm-hmm. you may be aware, you know, men are typically the breadwinners there. But then when I came to Canada, you can see the differences in society from a psychological aspect. You can see the differences when both the man and the woman can earn, you know, comparable salaries and lead lives and lead households. And it's very, very interesting. It's nuanced. It's hard to see if you're not seeing it, but because I've grown up in Southeast Asia for 18 years, I can see the difference, right? And so going back to you, I understand why that would have a profound impact on you, having seen your mother, you know, work so hard, raise you. And it's like, it's such a heavy and emotional point, because I think if a person's not gone through that experience, it's hard to understand the profound impact it can have on us in our childhood and our teenage years. So I'm very, very delighted that you're now doing the same for your kids. And as you mentioned, you know, if you're out of the house for 8 to 10 to 12 hours, it must not just be for good income, but it has to be something long-term, having a long-term impact on your family as well as society as a whole, and helping women succeed, right? So all comes full circle, and I see you. You know, it's a very beautiful story.
Thank you. I mean, I have to say, right, I mean, I also feel it's a place of huge privilege, right, to be able to do that. I have a really supporting husband who has a solid career of his own that's enabling me to sort of go out and be the change I want to see, right? Like, it's not everyone. I wouldn't be able to do that if he didn't say, okay, I have your back, like, go try doing something risky while I have this right here. And so for me, I think I was raised by really strong women all around me. So it's pretty clear to me why women should be in leadership positions and why we should be seeing them at every sector, in every sector, and at every level, right? Representation matters. But I raised two boys, and it matters for me that they see partnership in both sides, right? They see that it's not just about me or, you know, women being leaders, but they're also seeing, you know, men sort of share the load at home. Because if we want to see more women out, and, you know, if we are able to do the work to enable them to go out and, you know, share and bring in more money to the household, mm-hmm. then men can take a little bit of pressure off of them to do that. They don't need to be the sole breadwinners, and they can instead, you know, share the load at home. And then children that are being raised in that sort of environment get to see that you can play multiple roles. And what it means is you're supporting each other. You're supporting each other in whatever it is that you want to do. And it's not really about your gender. It's about stepping in and showing partnership. And I think that gets lost in this, you know, in this conversation when we talk about feminism and, you know, gender and equality. It's a nuanced point that doesn't necessarily always land. But I just think it's an important one to talk about.
One of the things about your fund that really got me interested, in addition to the fact that you back female founders, was that your fund wasn't always a fund. Fun fact for the readers, Graham Walker actually started as a community first, and that later on came the fund. Generally, what I see is the other way around. There is a fund, and then they build a community, et cetera, to drive top of funnel LPs and top of funnel founder deal flow, right? But with you guys, it was the opposite. It started as a community and then turned it into a very effective fund. So talk to us through that. What's the story there? Pretty unique.
Oh man, I like to say that, you know, Graham and Walker is a community-driven fund. Yeah, you're right. We did start as the Female Founders Alliance back in 2017. Leslie Feinzing, who's the founder, basically, little story of you. She started the Female Founders Alliance because she was herself a founder. She had an edtech startup back then, and she was looking to connect with other founders and sort of exchange notes on fundraising. She started a Facebook group. That community of about 25 founders has organically grown to what is today over 4,500 founders across the country.
What?
These are vetted, women-led, venture-backed or venture-scalable startups. I met Leslie about 5 years ago, and there was this instant kinship. And when I met her, this community was still—it was still in its nascent stages. I think we were close to 300-ish founders back then. But it was growing steadily enough that she decided to shut her own startup to focus full time on this founder community and make it her main focus. And so
That's awesome.
over the years we've run an accelerator, we've run fundraising boot camps, we've run day long conferences across the country for founders called Founder Days. And networking events where founders really get, you know, get matched directly with investors. And somewhere down the line, as we were doing all this work and building this community, running all this programming, all with corporate funding, mind you, we realized that if we were spending our one precious life in supporting, you know, female founders, then we also want to be able to invest in them. And so in 2021, we announced our Fund One, which is what we're
Nice.
actively investing out of today.
That's such a great story. And so now you've been an operator, you're working in the fund now, as a partner, and you're supporting these founders, helping with the community, funding them, and making sure they have what they require to go to their next funding round. I'm kind of curious, so how has your experience as an operator, how does that help you do your role every day? Because there's so many nuances there, Divya. You know, there's a lot of operators investing in a ton of startups, and now their portfolio is expanding. There's time management, making sure the founders are, their concerns are addressed. But in your case, talk to us about what you've unlocked in your career as a VC partner to learn to better support these founders through your engagement with them.
Like I said a little before, right? A big part of it is just understanding the challenges that they're facing. We do a lot of work in getting them set up with the right resources, in working with corporates to getting them benefits at, you know, either very discounted prices or free. Most likely free because we're, you know, that's what the partnerships, that's what we negotiate on their behalf. And we've created a lot of content that is that we've built in-house that we share during our within our accelerator and within our program. We have a master class. We run a master class on fundraising, which is proprietary to us. It is a lot of it has to do with, you know, content that's not available outside, but it's based on our own experiences that we know founders find really, really valuable. We also, of course, you know, tap into experts within the industry who we bring in to sort of address and talk to these founders. But I think the thing that really sets us apart, or the thing that I know founders find really valuable in our content and our programming, is actual connections to investors. So we do investor matching, investor, you know, one-on-ones, where founders, we literally will take the pains to see, you know, the sector, the industry, the stage that the founder is in, and connect them to investors in our network, and have those founders meet people that they would not have otherwise had a chance to meet, right? Because they are not investors that are easily accessible. So I think that's what sort of differentiates us, really just understanding what the problem is and why we are the right people to help these founders is because we were in their shoes, honestly.
And it sounds so high touch too, like highly tailored, high touch engagements, making sure the founders are meeting you're almost doing the pre-work. So when they do meet with the investor, there's a very heavy double opt-in. So both parties know what to expect. I've never heard anyone mention that to me. It must be so, so valuable for your founders. And then I'm guessing over time, you take feedback from both parties and then, you know, machine learning to make your investor matching program smarter and more accurate over time, right?
We try and do that the best we can right now with, you know, our super small team. so it's always a challenge to see, okay, wait, how much of this can we tailor make and how much, okay, should we do more? Should we spend our time allowing these founders to meet more investors? And then that way we can sort of, you know, increasing the quantity versus not having the chance to sort of vet everyone and see whether they are, you know, they'll invest. Because a lot of times, honestly, these are 30-minute meetings. I don't know if the investor is going to write a check at the end of that, right? That doesn't happen. So we always coach our founders to say, look, this is an opportunity for you to build a relationship. Here are the 5 investors you're going to meet today. And make sure at the end of, you know, the end of today, you have left a memorable impression. So you are memorable to them. You are able to, you know, connect with them later. And you've left yourself the opportunity to build a long-lasting relationship with that investor. Have there been times when investors have actually invested in these? Yes, multiple times. But our job is to open doors, and we try and do that, you know, consistently and with as many founders as we can across the
year. What blows my mind, Divya, you know, Harvard Business Review, when I was looking at it earlier today, so they said that research shows that firms with more women in senior positions are more profitable, socially responsible, and provide safer, higher quality customer experiences, among many other benefits. Yet, last time I was looking at some stats, feel free to correct me, but I think 2.3% of female founders actually get checks. I'm, you know, from the outside, I look at these stats and it's like, what's going on here? So why do you think that is? And like, what stages are we talking? Like 2.3% of female founders get checks at what stage? C, pre-seed, series A. Would love to get some insights.
ready to blow your mind, Mash.
Let's do it.
That statistic is an old one. It's actually gotten worse. I think in 2022, it was like 2%, or 2.1%, something stupid, of the total capital invested in venture back. So I said total, that includes all stages. There's a lot of articles out there as to why this is happening. And, you know, obviously there are a lot more investors today that are being a lot more intentional about, you know, investing in women and being, you know, investing in diverse founders. But there's a lot of reasons why this is happening. It's a combination of systemic and cultural factors at play. There's gender bias. I cannot stress this enough, right? Unconscious biases and stereotypes affect how investors perceive female founders. There's network disparities. We know that investors rely on existing networks to find deal flow. Historically, male entrepreneurs and investors have dominated the startup ecosystem.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah. So this leads to a network effect, and that can highly disadvantage female entrepreneurs who have limited access.
Exactly.
And a lot of investing has, it's pattern recognition, right? So investors may prefer to invest in entrepreneurs who resemble those that they've seen be successful in the past. So that's a self-fulfilling cycle. So this is, I mean, there's just so much. I mean, lack of diversity in the check writing side of things. This is why we need more women to be in investment firms, to be in check writing positions. When there are fewer women in leadership positions in VC firms, that impacts the dire it directly impacts the number of founders that are getting that are women that are getting checks out of that firm. So and ultimately, I think access, like that's my favorite one. And the reason I keep saying that out loud again and again is that is literally the reason why Female Founders Alliance exists today, is for all of these reasons, right? We provide access. We provide, we are all women who are writing checks. We have to say this again and again. It's part of our thesis. We're not mandated to only invest in women. That's not the way our fund was built. It is our deal flow that is proprietary. And that's because of our community. And so if 100% of my deal flow is women, there is no pipeline problem. So when people in the world say, oh, when the big VCs say, oh, we don't see enough founders, it is not a pipeline problem. If you look, there are enough women creating world-changing companies. Trust me.
Hell yeah, I like that. And when you were mentioning the bullet points, it's so funny how the problems actually stack up. So if you have the gender bias, it results in a limited access for female entrepreneurs to get access to the VC network, to other female entrepreneurs, obviously. But then because you have that gender bias and you have the pattern recognition, you're kind of looking to back successful male entrepreneurs, and that kind of results in cross intros being made to back those similar kinds of, male entrepreneurs. And as a result, the network effect just gets stronger. So just gets worse and worse. It's super interesting. And you know what? I'm gonna get to the bottom of this after 20, 30 episodes. Maybe I can come back to you, maybe add my reasons to the list as well, which brings me to my next question. How is Graham Walker, like, what are you folks doing differently to help close this gap? I know that there's a community. I know that you have some, smart entrepreneurs in that community, and then there's intros being made, et cetera. Macro, what are you and your team doing to increase the number from 2% to 2.5%? I'm very curious to dive into that.
Oh man, I wish our fund was much, much, much larger to really make a dent in that. But we are, I mean, we're working towards the right direction. And what we're doing is really, our foundation lies in the tailored support that we bring to female founders, right from our programming that's designed to keeping women founders at the center. The resources, the benefits that we work to putting in front of them, all free of charge to our community. Because we want them to focus on building their business, right? Our accelerator has been called the Y Combinator for female founders with TechCrunch.
Damn. Wow.
We continue to run a version of that, which is called now the which is called the Catalyst, and it's 3 week version of the same accelerator that we run twice a year. What we are doing is just arming founders with what they need to know to raise that successful round, and we are doing that by connecting them to investors, creating those relationships, getting them real meetings with people who write checks. And as of today, I mean, here's a stat you can, for your listeners, we have 400, over 400 founders that have participated in our startup readiness programs and gone on to raise over $100 million in pre-seed capital.
What? That's a huge number. Wow. Congratulations. That's so
Thank you.
cool.
We are very proud. We're proud of what we do.
So I just want to capture that, Divya. If there's an entrepreneur listening right now, how can they get access to you and your team? You mentioned the Catalyst, you mentioned the Accelerator, you mentioned your community, the Female Founders Alliance. How can founders get access to you guys and apply? Like, would love to know more.
Well, you can go to the website, grahamwalker.com, and you can basically just fill out a very short, easy form to be part of the community. That being part of the community gives you access to everything. It's free. It gives you
Wow.
access to the Slack channel, which has over 4,000, founders in there. Just a whole ton of resources and benefits, and our newsletter, which will basically tell you, all of our programming that's happening for free. So And also, if you're ready to pitch, you can pitch the fund as well. If you also look up Female Founders Alliance, that website, by the way, is going to be up very soon. But right now, it redirects you there. So even if you search Female Founders Alliance, that exists as well.
Beautiful. I'll put the links in the show notes as well and make it extremely clear where exactly to go. Thanks for sharing,
Thank
Divya.
you.
One of the questions I ask our guests is about VC platform. I've been told that the definition of VC platform is essentially everything that excludes actually funding the startup. So pre and post investment, how exactly, mainly post investment, how exactly do you support your founders to grow their revenue, but also getting ready for the next fundraising round? How exactly are you supporting? But my question to you, Divya, how do you see the definition of VC platform? And how have you seen the space evolve over the last 5 years? And as they say, you're in the arena. So I'd love to hear from you. What does the word mean to you? And how have you seen that specific VC platform space evolve over the last 4 to 5 years?
This has been a really key differentiator for us. Most large VCs have well-established platform teams that can bring so much support to early stage founders. But smaller funds and emerging funds like ours, it's impossible or unheard of to fund a whole platform team just because you don't have that kind of access to management fees, right? So we went and created a platform and created that community and programming for founders first before we went and raised a fund. So the priority is very clear. We define platform as everything that we can do to arm founders to get access to capital and grow their business. For our portfolio, what that looks like is sometimes it's introduction to investors for downstream funding, right? Sometimes it means that we are using our PR chops to introduce them to press or helping them with the story that they should tell. Many times it's really just being the person that they can reach out to when they're having co-founder issues. So it's a wide range of support. With our portfolio, we do go really out of our way to just make sure we are available and that they know we are around. Especially like last year when the whole SVB crisis happened. I know how important it was for them to be able to reach out. And I know that Leslie had a huge role to play there, where she was just literally texting founders, trying to give them any information that she could. And we over the weekend put together resources, overnight put together resources that they were able to sort of get access to. So yeah, there's I think platform can look like different things for different people. For us, I mean, I think it means just sort of being available.
That's a very well-detailed overview. Let me play it back to you. So you have the community. In addition to the community, Divya, you also have resources. And resources can mean introductions to, other vendors, other suppliers who can provide a specific service,
Service
let's say, like
providers, yeah.
legal, let's say, the
Yeah.
classic.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, there's the personal conversations, if there's, disputes and or just founders wanting to talk to better understand how they can build, but less on the financial side, more on the personal side. And there's also the introductions that you provide to downstream investors, potentially for a Series A. And also on top of that, if founders, let's say, from a specific vertical want to speak to another investor just to see what they're seeing in the space, you help make those introductions and maybe potentially for the next fundraising round as well. Is there anything I missed? Like I'm curious to go deeper into it. Are there other more specific elements that you've seen to be very useful for your portfolio founders? Like, and I ask that, right? Because as I'm speaking to the guests on this pod, I also want to understand how you folks are seeing the VC platform evolve in the next 5 years. What does the next half decade look like? So I'm kind of curious, what are you guys doing today to, I guess, become even better at supporting founders, and how do you see this space evolve over the next half decade, Divya?
Yeah, I think ultimately having a platform can be seen as a differentiator, right? That's what VCs are doing it for. In a crowded field, it's great strategy for venture funds to differentiate themselves and be able to offer crucial services to early stage companies. And I don't see that going away. I think it'll get increasingly more important for funds to be able to compete for deals. not necessarily in today's market, because I feel like it's not as crazy as it was, right, 18 months ago. But in general, having something specific that you can bring to the founder is really helpful when you're trying to get on their cap table. So the importance of, you know, being able to speak to whatever that one thing is. You don't need to be able to do everything, but, you know, if you are, maybe you are focused on HR. This is, I recently met a VC who said, all we do is bring HR support. And so that was great because we were talking to them and we co-invested with them in a company recently. And the conversation was, okay, great. So if you are coming on board, I see what you're going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. And so here's what, you know, they need to round out their cap table. Maybe we need to bring them an expert in this field. Like, so it's sort of talking to each other and recognizing that we're all in the same boat. We're all supporting this founder. What is each of us bringing? So from a founder perspective too, they, if they have the luxury to sort of look at their cap table, it's important for them to be able to see their different investors, and each of them bring, you know, a different superpower.
Like a USP,
right? So I don't see that going away. I think one of the things that is understated for a lot of founders is the importance of community. I feel like any founder will tell you this. It's possibly one of the loneliest journeys one can experience. And so having a community of others who are in the same boat to exchange notes with is just so valuable. And so VCs can really provide that with enabling connection within their portfolio companies. And I know that, you know, for our portfolio, that really is super valuable. And of course, along them deeply knowing that if they need something, they can just call us and we're just a call away.
Yeah. That makes me feel so warm. It's like having, I don't know, it's like having a friend I can speak to, you know, considering the professional, et cetera, but still it's like having a close friend I can call up and share my deepest problems with, knowing full well that, again, this is a 10-year relationship that we're building, right? And it goes a long way, I can tell. I have a very specific question, if you don't mind me asking, Divya, which is, so I asked this to one of our previous guests, super, super cool guy from a company called In Motion Ventures. I asked him, Divya, that how do you, quote unquote, showcase your platform capabilities to founders? And what he mentioned is, well, Mash, it's not a post-investment thing, it's a pre-investment thing. You need to let them know that this is your value prop as a VC partner, and you show them that ahead, and that gives them the confidence to have you on their cap table. Just to get tactical here, Divya, how can, if there's a fund listening to this podcast today, how can they better showcase their capabilities to founders? You know, like, what do you do as a VC fund to let founders know and LPs know that these are your specific USP VC platform capabilities? How can they do things a bit differently to stand out, you think? And this is me pulling on your brand and marketing expertise. You know, I just really want to hear you out.
I mean, yeah, I think your brand should be able to speak to some of that. If you're able to really hone into like a single or, you know, a main focus as your strength, obviously communicating that through all of your communication, like whether it's your website, whether it's your you know, social, finding ways to sort of drill that out is obviously helpful. But I think that for founders, you have to be able to just clearly talk about that in your meetings with them, right? Like, because when I'm having, maybe not in the first meeting, but maybe in the second or third meeting, as we're getting more serious about each other, I will push the founder to ask, you know, like, what questions you have for me? And if they're not asking, okay, what are you going to bring? Because I really hope that they are asking that, they're evaluating me as much as I'm evaluating them.
Yeah.
That's the time when I can say, hey, here, these are the ways that we've helped our founders in the past, or these are the ways that our portfolio company really lean on us. But a lot of times this just comes across in conversations when you're sort of like checking each other out and you're trying to figure out, okay, fine, how if it's a really competitive round, then I want to bring that up earlier in the conversations. Maybe in the first meeting, I will say, here's what we've noticed in your cap table, or here's what we've noticed in your business that we can really sort of help you with. So you
Nice.
want to be, you want to be careful about how you bring it up and how much you push. But a lot of times, we encourage, we in the community side of things, I coach founders to say, you need to ask your investor what they're going to bring to the table besides the investment.
This rings very well with the first episode we did with Abby, which was in this room, and she mentioned that founders need to have the confidence and they have the right to, well, she didn't use the word investigate, but the word is investigate. Hey, you literally want to buy equity in our company. You need to tell us how you're going to be supporting us, because this is a 10-year journey. We're not just here for the check. We're here for pl check plus plus. Like, there's more to this than just a financial relationship. And to build on what you're saying, Divya, I think when a VC is speaking to a founder to understand their top challenges for the next quarter, for the next year, the founders, if they're willing to open up, would bring up the specific challenges that they're having. For example, go to market, or maybe their product, just the retention is really bad, the churn's really bad, right? And I think conversations like that would give an opportunity for the VC to say, you know what? I think I have someone you should talk to. And this is just me giving my opinion, is that those conversations don't need to happen after investment. They could happen pre-investment, because you're with the startup mindset, you're kind of pre-selling your venture fund to the founder, and the founder would say, wow, I didn't even take this person's money yet, yet he or she's connecting me to their network. This must be valuable, right? So it's almost like a startup sales process, by showing your value ahead of time as you have those deep conversations around what their challenges are, critical challenges. Yeah, so I think that's a very great point. But before I let you go, Divya, I have to ask you something. If there was a 20-something year old listening to this podcast, and if they wanted to get into venture, given your very diverse and super interesting career and entry into venture capital, what advice would you give them? What are some do's and don'ts that a 20-something year old should keep in mind if they want to get into venture
Oh my God.
capital? Your initial reactions are the best. So genuine or unorganic. Love it.
don't know. I feel like there's so much data available right now online, right? On this. You can pretty much learn everything you want to learn about any industry. Okay, what would I say? I mean, I think I would just first ask them to think really deeply about their why. Like, why do you want to work in venture? Like, it's, I just think a lot of people think it's very glamorous, and I feel like I don't know if that, like, that should not be the reason to, get into anything. So my advice would be to get experience at a startup or two. Like, I feel like that the experience at that super early stage is like really valuable. If you want to make a career in venture, it's deeply respected, if you have some sort of entrepreneurial experience. So if you have an idea, go give that a shot. Showing that you've been entrepreneurial either as a founder or in a role within a startup, again, something that's deeply respected. Because you've done this, right? You've been in that operator role. I think that is, you're deeply respected not just in VC, but also by other founders. You're taken seriously. And I think that's something that I like to see. I think that there's a lot of intellectual stimulation. It's a big high. You get to spend your day like meeting five different founders, building five different companies, and just thinking through what those challenges might be that they're facing, and brainstorming with them on how to overcome. One of the challenges could be in HR. One of them could be in marketing or go to market. I think that's super exciting. But it's also like really fast paced and can be high pressure. And so thinking about whether that's something you will enjoy, doing day in and day out. What else can I say? You're making decisions with very little information. So you learn
Damn.
to trust your intuition and use
Yeah.
data to sort of back that up. That part for me personally is very exciting.
I assume.
I think the one big don't, though, I will say, is don't underestimate the importance of interpersonal skills and, communication. I think building relationships that, like building relationships and a rapport with entrepreneurs, and the ability to really be able to see them as human is, and not just a ticket to your fund return, right? Like, it's crucial and can take you a long ways.
So I have a consulting background, and whenever mm-hmm. high school kids or university students ask me, oh, you know, I want to get into consulting, I, before they ask me any question, I'm like, why? Why do you want to torture yourself? Like, I'm very direct with my words. 90% of the time, and I say this with utmost respect, they will give me a reason and they don't say it, but I can sense it. It's like, oh, you know, I want to work at a big company. I want to have that name on my resume. And I'm thinking, sure, that can be a push, but that's not going to make you work till 10 p.m. two consecutive weeks, because you're going to crash on day number three if all you want is glamour. Mm. Glamour comes after 10 years. It doesn't come after 10 days. And I'm sensing that venture capital is kind of similar. And also, you're handling people's money. And it's not your money. And if you don't, I guess, invest your time and other people's resources in the right areas, if you're not doing that properly, you can only do that for so long until, you know, the music stops. And I think it's a very, I don't want to say high risk, but it's definitely, there's a lot to lose if you don't do it right. And I think I was listening to Keith Verbois on a pod once, and I think he mentioned that the best VCs get it right 60% of the time or something like that. I heard that. I'm like, damn, that is tough. It's super humbling to kind of, you know, hear folks like yourself talk about the VC space, because you realize it's very, very difficult, and it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, I totally echo everything that you were saying, but and we're a little early in our journey, right, as a VC. Mm-hmm. So I can't say for sure that we haven't seen a return yet, or, you know, so I want to be a little humble in all of the nice things that you have to say. I just feel like let's we're doing all the things, but yeah, let's all wait and watch. I think we're all just trying to make sure we're being really responsible, because we are, you know, we have a fiduciary duty to our LPs. We're mm-hmm. handling their money. So it's not for the faint-hearted.
Love that. Now, Divya, before you go, I do want to ask you some questions. And it's funny, I think, you know, in Southeast Asia, where I grew up, my mom used to watch the show at night. It used to be called Coffee with Karan. And I this guy. This man was sassy. He would make snarky comments at his guests. And I hated that guy, but my mom would watch his show all the time. But the one thing I loved about this man was his confidence. And he would always end the show with something called like a hot seat or, you know, rapid fire questions. 20 years later, I'm still a fan of how he orchestrated that part. So I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions, Divya. Very short.
Very important, by the way. I'm just going to say, I love Coffee with Karan. Like, that's my guilty pleasure watch. Like, I just the fact, like, I'm just imagining myself right now on that couch. And yes,
in that couch.
Okay, yeah, I'm on Coffee with Karan, Coffee with Mash. All right, let's do this.
Perfect. And you have like Coffee with Mash, like written on a little cup. Like,
a little cup.
Like this cup.
Yeah,
there you yeah. go. Oh. There we go. That's a big cup. So what's your favorite pizza topping?
Oh, okay. So this is very controversial. Like, I just feel like I'm going to get canceled. So I'm one of those. Don't judge me. I love Hawaiian pizza. So I'm the one. Yeah. Oh, you too? What? There's not a lot of us.
You know what? It adds like a little bit of a salty, weird taste to the usual taste. I've pitched pineapple. Go for it.
Yes. Yes. Pineapple, ham, and jalapenos. That's my secret ingredient on top. But I think that's for me up there.
So you're worried about getting canceled. I think I got canceled on my own show when I mentioned pineapple. I got like sassy, like the guests all the whole time, they're super professional. And the last minute they're like, Mash, please leave. I'm like, dude what? I got canceled on my own show for saying pineapple.
Great. So then we both can hang out with the canceled folks, because I think it's a pretty
exactly.
good
you know
choice.
What? It's us against them. Okay. If you could pick one superpower, what would it be, Divya?
So I think there's two. I mean, I'm going to say two. One, I think this is a hard one, but if I could have the power to teleport, that would be awesome. I would 100% use it all the time to go across to India, my home, and then be back. And, you know, I would be doing that all day long. That is one. But then there's a second one, which is, I don't know if it's a superpower, but I don't know if you're a Harry Potter fan, but if I could, I would love to own a pensieve for for someone who hasn't read Harry Potter, a conceive is one of those magical, like a basin where you can deposit.
See the future.
No, you can deposit memories. And you sort of like take them out like silver threads from your brain and sort of put it into this basin. And whenever you want, you can just jump into it and sort of relive it. Like you're in it again. So I feel like we need that today. Like, I think that we're not very far away from recreating that with all the technology. Like, I'm looking for it. And I would invest in that. If any founders listening, go build me a conceive.
20 pitches. Like, I'm pre-revenue, I'm pre-product, but I heard you on the pod and I think you should invest. So fun fact, that teleportation is also common with me. I told that to one of our previous guy, I think it was Oliver, and he said, yeah, that can be your like USP as a fund, you know, you have teleportation platform service or something like that. I was like, What I told him is I would build the next FedEx, same hour delivery. Okay. Yeah, thinking like a VC. There we go. Same hour delivery. I'm gonna put UPS out of I'll acquire UPS, I'll acquire FedEx, fire everyone, and I'll just deliver the packages myself with teleportation.
Oh my god. Okay. All right. I see you.
There we go. Last question for you, Ms. Divya. If your life was a movie, what genre would it be?
I think it's gonna be a musical.
A musical?
Because there's always a background score in my head to everything that I do. So, you know, and a musical has everything. There's drama, there's romance, there's, you know, suspense sometimes. It could be anything, but dancing. There's music, there's dancing, but there's always music, and there's, you know, dancing and backdrop dancers. Like, who doesn't want to go through life with backdrop dancers? Like, background dancers. That would be pretty fun.
What a cool answer. No one said musical shows so far. Everyone says comedy.
I'm not very funny. I don't think that's one of my skills. I need help being funny. But musical, I would do that.
That's, you know what? I love it. I love it. Very unique answers. Very cool. I hope we don't get canceled for a pineapple, but jokes aside, Divya, what a fantastic show. I had a great time learning more about yourself, your career, what drives you as a person, and how you've, by God's grace and through your hard work and through your family support, how you've been able to come full circle and really just do your best work aligned with your personal mission and support founders that you truly, truly love being around, you know? And I think you use the word privileged. I think it's also a product of your hard work and your persistence over the years. So I'm very happy I got to share this last hour with you. So thank you so much for coming on, really.
Thank you so much, Mash. This was a pleasure.
Beautiful. I'll see you soon. Wow, what a down-to-earth person. I haven't met someone like Divya in so, so long. And I just love how honest she was throughout the entire episode. And by the way, some of the statistics that she mentioned around female founders receiving funding, pretty alarming if you ask me. I actually had no idea going into this episode that it was that interesting. And it was just really fun to finally connect with someone like her after a very long time. And the coffee with Karan joke, I've been waiting my whole year of this podcast to find someone who got the reference, and I finally found it, and it was Divya. If you want to see Divya in action, head on over to YouTube and type in Hire CMO Podcast. That's HIRECMO Podcast, or you can just say pod. And by the way, I'm also taking questions now. So a lot of times I'm realizing I'm asking the same questions to every guest, but now I'm outsourcing crowdsourcing these questions as well. So if you want me to ask a specific question about VC platform to my guests, just head on over to YouTube, write a comment, or you can tweet at me at HIRECMO, that's Hire CMO, and just tell me what question you want me to ask on the next episode, and I'll do my best to ask my guests. Thanks so much, and have a wonderful evening.